from branch to branch and howls at the moon. They're starting to think it's a hoax, Cal said quietly. Ellie's anger turned to fear. If the media decided it was a hoax, they'd pull out of town. Without publicity, the girl's family might never be found. She reached into her canvas book bag and pulled out the photograph Julia had taken. Circulate this. Peanut took the photo.
Wow! Your sister is a miracle worker!
We're calling her Alice, Ellie said. Put that on the record. Maybe a name will make her seem more real. Girl comes awake slowly. This place is quiet, peaceful, even though she cannot hear the river's call or the leaves whispering. The sun is hidden from her. Still, the air is lighted and bright. She is not afraid. For a moment she cannot believe it. She touches her thoughts, pokes through the darkness of them. It is true. She is not afraid. She cannot recall ever feeling like this. Usually her first thought is, hide. She has spent so long trying to make herself as small as possible. She can breathe here, too, in this strange squared world where light comes from a magical touch and the ground is hard and level. She can breathe. It does not hold on to the bad smells of him. She likes it here. If Wolf were with her, she would stay in this square forever, marking her territory in the swirling water and sleeping on the place she is told to, where it is soft and smells of flowers. I see you are awake, little one. It is the sun-haired her who has spoken. She is at the eating place, with the thin stick in her hand again, the tool that leaves blue markings behind. Girl gets up and goes into the cleaning place, where the magical pool is now empty. She pulls down her pants and sits on the cold circle. When she is done peeing, she hits the white thing. In the other room, her stands up. She is hitting her hands together, making a sound like a hunter's shot, and smiling. Girl likes that smile. It makes her feel safe. From the babble of forbidden sounds, girl hears, come. She moves slowly, hunched over, holding her insides tightly. She knows how dangerous a moment like this can be, especially when her guard is down. She should always stay afraid. But the smile and the air and the softness of the sleeping place make her forget the cave. Him. She sits where Sunhair wants her to. I'll be good, she thinks, looking up, trying to force the happy face. Sunhair brings her food to eat. Girl remembers the rules, and she knows the price of disobeying. It is a lesson him taught her lots of times. She waits for Sunhair to smile and nod, to say something. When it is done, girl eats the sweet, sticky food. When she is finished, Sunhair takes the rest of the food away. Girl waits. Finally, Sunhair sits across from girl. She touches her chest and says the same thing over and over. Julia. Then she touches girl. Alice. Alice. Girl wants to be good, wants to stay in this place with this her that smiles, and she knows that something is expected of her now, but she has no idea what she should do. It seems as if Sunhair wants girl to make the bad sounds, but that can't be true. Her heart is beating so fast it makes her feel sick and dizzy. Finally, Sunhair pulls back her hand. She reaches into the square hole beside her and begins putting things on the table. Girl is mesmerized. She has never seen any of these things. She wants to touch them, taste and smell them. Sunhair takes one of the pointed sticks and touches it to the book of lines. Behind her touch, everything is red. Crayon, color book. Girl makes a sound of wonder. Sunhair looks up. She is talking to girl now. In all the babble of sound, she begins to hear a repetition. Alice, play. Play. Girl frowns, trying to understand. She almost knows these sounds. But Sunhair keeps talking, keeps pulling things out of the secret place until girl can't remember what she is trying to remember. Every new object seizes hold of her, makes her want to reach out. Then, when girl is almost ready to make her move, to touch the pointed red stick, Sunhair pulls it out. Girl screams and scrambles backward, but she is trapped by this cage on which she sits. She falls, hits her head, and screams again, then crawls on her hands and knees toward the safety of the trees. She knew she shouldn't have let her guard down. So what that she can breathe here? It is a little thing, a trick. Sunhair is frowning at her, talking in a haze of white noise. Girl can make out no sounds at all. Her heart is beating so fast it sounds like the drums of the tribe that fish along the river. There is almost no space between them now. Sunhair holds it out. Girl screams again and claws at her hair, blowing her nose. Him is here. He knows she likes Sunhair, and he will hurt her now. All she can think is the sound she knows best of all. No! Alice pulled at her hair and snorted, shaking her head. A low, throaty growl seemed caught in her throat. Julia was seeing true emotion. This was Alice's heart, and it was a dark, scary place. Julia opened the door and threw the dream catcher out in the hallway, then shut the door. There, she said in a soothing voice, moving slowly. I'm sorry, honey, really sorry. She knelt down in front of Alice, so they were almost eye to eye. Alice was absolutely still now, her eyes wide with fear. You're terrified, Julia said. You think you're in trouble, don't you? Very slowly she reached out and touched Alice's wrist. The touch was fleeting and as soft as a whisper. It's okay, Alice. You don't have to be scared. At the touch, Alice made a strangled, desperate sound and stumbled backward. She hid behind the plants and began a quiet, desperate howling. The child had no idea how to be comforted. Another of the many heartbreaks of her life. Julia said, making a great show of looking around the room. What shall we do now? After a few moments, she picked up the old battered copy of Alice in Wonderland. Where did we leave young Alice? She went back to the bed and sat down. With the book open on her lap, she looked up. Between two green fronds, a tiny, earnest face peered at her. Come, Julia said softly. No hurt. Alice made a pathetic little sound. A mule of sorts. It tugged at Julia's heart, that whimper that sounded at once too old and too young. It was a distillation of longing from fear. Come, she said again, patting the bed. No hurt. Still, Alice remained in her safe spot. Julia started to read. You ought to be ashamed of yourself, said Alice. A great girl like you, she might well say this, to go on crying in this way. Stop this moment, I tell you. But she went on, all the same, shedding gallons of tears until there was a large pool around her. There was a sound across the room, a scuffing of feet. Julia smiled to herself and kept reading. It is a trick. Girl knows this. She knows it. And yet, The sounds are so soothing. She sits in the forest so long her legs begin to ache. Although stillness has always been her way, in this bright place she likes to move, if only because she can. Don't do it, she thinks, shifting her weight from one foot to another. It is a trick. When girl gets close, her will beat her. Come here, Alice. From the jumble of sounds Sunhair makes, girl hears these special noises again. From somewhere, she remembers that they are words. Trick! She has no choice but to obey, of course. Sooner or later, sooner probably, Sunhair will tire of waiting. This game of hers will lose its fun, and girl will be in trouble. Very slowly she steps from her hiding place. Her heart is hammering. She is afraid it will break through her chest and fall onto the floor. She looks down at her hands and feet. Here, in this oddly bright place, the ground is made of hard strips the color of dirt. There are no leaves or pine needles to soften her steps. Every movement hurts, but not as much as what will come. She has been bad. Screaming is very bad. She knows this. Out there are strangers and bad people. Loud sounds attract them. Quiet, damn you, she knows. As she approaches the bed, she lowers her head, then drops down to her hands and knees, looking as weak as possible. This she learned from the wolves. Alice? Girl flinches, closes her eyes. Not a stick, she hopes, hearing the whining sound in her own mouth. At first, the touch is so soft she doesn't notice. The mule catches in her throat. She looks up. Sunhair is closer now, smiling down at her. She is talking. Always she is talking in that sunlight voice of hers. It sounds like a river in the last days of summer, soft and soothing. Her eyes are wide open, as green as new leaves. There is no anger on her face. And she is stroking girl's hair, touching her gently. Is okay, okay, no hurt. Girl leans forward, but just a little. She wants Sunhair to keep touching her. It feels so good. Come here, Alice. Sunhair pats the soft place beside her. In a single motion, girl leaps up and curls next to her. It is the safest she has felt in a long time. When Sunhair starts to talk again, girl closes her eyes and listens. Julia sat very still, although her mind was moving at light speed. What was the story with the dream catcher? Had Alice understood, come here? Or had she responded to the bed patting? Either way, the response was a form of communication, unless Alice had simply jumped onto the bed of her own volition. Julia's fingers itched to make some notes, but now was not the time. Instead, she turned her attention back to the book and began reading where she left off. As she finished the chapter, Julia felt a movement on the bed. She paused in her reading and glanced down at Alice, who had repositioned herself. Now the child lay curled cat-like against her, Alice's forehead almost touching her thigh. You have no idea what it's like to feel safe in this world, do you? Julia said, putting the book down for a moment. Her throat tightened. It took her several seconds to suppress the emotion enough to say, I can help you if you'll let me. This is a good place to start, with you beside me. Trust is everything. The instant the words were out of Julia's mouth, she remembered the last time she'd said them. It had been a cool, steely day in the season that passed for winter in Southern California. She'd been in the $2,000 leather chair in her office, making notes and listening to another girl's voice. In the sofa opposite her sat Amber Zuniga, all dressed in black, trying not to cry. "Trust is everything," Julia had said. "You can tell me what you're feeling right now." Julia closed her eyes. The memory was the kind that physically hurt. That meeting had taken place only 2 days before Amber's rampage. Why hadn't she... Stop! She refused to follow those thoughts. They led to a dark and hopeless place. If she went there, she might not be able to come back, and Alice needed her. Perhaps more than anyone had ever needed her. "As I was saying..." Alice touched her. It was nothing at first, a movement as tentative as the brush of a butterfly wing. Julia saw it, but barely felt it. "That's good, honey," she whispered. "Come into this world. It's been lonely in yours, hasn't it? Scary?" No part of Alice moved except her hand. Very slowly, she reached out and petted Julia's thigh in an awkward, almost spastic motion. "It's frightening to touch another person sometimes," Julia said, wondering if any of her words were being understood. "Especially when we've been hurt. We can be afraid to reach out to someone else." The petting smoothed out, became a gentle stroking. Alice made a sound that was low in her throat, a kind of purr. She slowly lifted her chin and looked up at Julia. Those amazing blue-green eyes were pools of worried fear. "No hurt," Julia said, hearing the catch in her voice. She was feeling too much right now, and that was dangerous. Being a good psychiatrist was like reading a novel at 40. You needed to keep the words at arm's length, or everything became a blur. She stroked Alice's soft black hair again and again. "No hurt." It took a long time, but finally Alice stopped trembling. For the rest of the morning, Julia alternated between reading and talking to the girl. They broke for lunch and went to the table, but immediately afterward, Alice returned to the bed and hit the book with her open palm. Julia cleared the dishes, then retook her place on the bed and resumed her reading. By 2 o'clock, Alice had curled up closer to her and fallen asleep. Julia eased off the bed and stood there, staring down at this strange, quiet girl she called Alice. They had made so many breakthroughs in the last 2 days, but perhaps none held as much potential as the dream catcher. Alice had reacted so violently to the trinket. It had to be of critical importance. Julia knew what she needed now was a way to both release Alice's fear of the dream catcher and to explore it, without, of course, having Alice so terrified she hurt herself. It was the best weapon in her arsenal right now, the only object she had that elicited strong emotion. She had no choice but to use it. "Do you cry, Alice? Do you laugh? You're trapped inside yourself, aren't you? Why?" Julia drew back. She went over to her notes and wrote down everything that had transpired since breakfast. Then she read back over the words she'd written. "Violent reaction to dream catcher. Extreme bout of anger and or fear. As usual, patient's emotions are entirely directed inward. It's as if she has no idea how to express her feelings to others. Perhaps due to elective mutism. Perhaps due to training. Did someone, or something, teach her to be silent always? Was she abused for speaking out, or for speaking at all? Is she used to scratching and hair-pulling as her only emotional display? Is this how pack animals express emotions when out of view? Is this a symptom of wildness, or isolation, or abuse?" Some realization teased her, danced at the corner of her mind, moving in and out of focus too quickly for her to really see it. Julia put down her pen and stood up again. A quick look at the video camera assured her that it was still recording. She could study the footage of the Dreamcatcher incident again tonight. Maybe she'd missed something. She checked Alice again, made sure she was asleep, then left the room. Outside, in the hallway, the dogs lay coiled together, asleep. Julia stepped over them and retrieved the Dreamcatcher. It was a poorly made trinket, the kind of thing they sold at local souvenir shops. No bigger than a tea saucer, and as thin as the twigs that formed its circular perimeter, it was hardly threatening. Several cheap, shiny blue beads glittered amidst a string web. She suspected they usually came with a designer tag that detailed their importance to the local tribes of the Quinault and the Ho. What was its connection to Alice? Was she Native American? Was that a piece of the puzzle? Or was it not the Dreamcatcher in total that had frightened her, but rather some piece of it? The beads, the twigs, or the string? String, a cousin to rope. Ligature marks. Perhaps that was the connection. The string could have reminded Alice of being tied up. There was no way to know these answers until Alice herself revealed them. In ordinary therapy, bound by the normal conventions of time and money, it could take months for a child to confront such fears, perhaps years. But this case was far from ordinary. The longer Alice remained in her solitary, isolated world, the less likely it was that she would ever emerge. Therefore, they didn't have the luxury of time. She needed to force a confrontation between the two Alices, the child lost in the woods and the girl who'd been returned to the world. These two halves needed to integrate into a single personality, or Alice's future would be at risk. Desperate times called for desperate measures. There was only one thing to do, and it wouldn't be pretty. She went downstairs to call her sister. 15 minutes later, Ellie and Peanut walked through the front door. "Hey," Peanut said, grinning broadly and fluttering her bright pink star-spangled fingernails. Julia reached into her pocket and pulled out the Dreamcatcher. "Either one of you recognize this?"
"Sure, it's a Dreamcatcher," Peanut said, pulling a baggie full of carrot sticks out of her purse. "My son used to have one hanging from his bed. I think he bought it on a field trip up to Nia Bay. They're a Native American tradition. The idea is that they protect a sleeping child from nightmares. The bad dreams get caught in the web, while the good ones slip quietly through that hole in the middle." She grinned. "Discovery Channel, Native American History Week."
"Why?" Ellie asked Julia. Alice had a severe emotional response to this thing, snorting, scratching herself, screaming. It seemed to scare the crap out of her. Ellie reached over and picked up the Dreamcatcher, examining it. "You think it's the bad dream thing?"
"No, I think it's more personal. Maybe she was hurt in a room that had one, or by a person who made them. Or perhaps the string reminded her of the rope that was used to tie her ankle. I'm not sure yet, but there's something about it that set her off."
"I'll check it out," Ellie said. "Clues are damn few and far between. I'll send Earl up to the reservation. Maybe we'll get lucky."
"It's about time for some luck," Julia agreed, picking her purse up off the sofa.
"Where could I find a bunch of them for sale?"
"Swain's General Store," Peanut answered. "They have a local souvenir aisle."
"Great. I'll be back as soon as I can."
"Better wear a mask," Peanut muttered.
She and Ellie exchanged worried glances. Julia frowned.
"What's going on?"
"You remember Mort Elzick?" Ellie asked.
So it was small-town gossip. She should have known.
"No." Julia glanced at her watch. She wanted to be back, with the Dreamcatchers, when Alice woke from her nap. "I really don't have time for this now. I don't know how long Alice will sleep." She headed for the door.
"He published a photo of Alice in the Rain Valley Gazette.
The headline called her Wolf Girl," Peanut said, chewing loudly.
Julia stopped. All at once, she remembered Mort from high school. And from that night at the hospital. He'd bumped into her in the hallway. Of course. The bag he'd dropped held camera equipment. That was why he hadn't been at the meeting in the church. He'd used that time to sneak into the hospital. Slowly she turned. Any mention of me? Both women shook their heads. The town is protecting you, Ellie added. He knows you're here, but no one will confirm that you're helping Alice. I knew there'd be a leak. There always is. We're fine if... Peanut and Ellie exchanged another worried look. What? There's more? Julia demanded. Some of the reporters are leaving town. They think the whole thing is a hoax. Julia cursed under her breath. That was the one thing they couldn't afford. If the media withdrew now, they might never find out who Alice really was. The new photos, mine, I mean, should help. Also, release some bit of information, something scientific. Put someone in uniform on camera to talk about the search. Use lots of missing kids' statistics. Make every word sound official. That should buy us some time. You need to get her talking, Jules. No kidding. In the old days, her word would have been enough to convince the media. Now it would mean nothing. You want me to go get you the dream catchers? Peanut said gently. Julia hated to bend to pressure, but she had no choice. She couldn't let Mort get a photo of her. She tossed her purse back onto the sofa. Thanks, P. I'd appreciate that. 13. An hour later, Ellie and Peanut were back in the cruiser, heading for town. We need her to talk, Ellie said quietly. No matter how much evidence they accumulated, the truth always boiled down to that.
Julia's doing her best, but...
It could take a while. I know. And what if Mort's photo ruins everything? If the legitimate media thinks we're some hicks trying to put our city on the map, it's over.
Don't go looking for trouble, Elle. My Benji says...
The car radio squawked.
Ellie, are you there?
I'm not answering, Ellie said. It's never good news anymore.
That's a responsible choice. Probably just a 10-car pileup on the interstate anyway. Or a hostage situation.
Another clatter of static.
Chief, Julia says you're in the car. If you don't answer, I'm going to tell everyone you wrote a letter to Rick Springfield in the 8th grade. Over.
Ellie hit the talk button. Don't force me to bring out the photos of you with a perm, Cal.
There you are. Thank God, Elle. You need to get here now. Over.
What's going on?
The kooks have landed, I swear to God.
Ellie cursed under her breath. She hit the siren and gas at the same time. In minutes, she was pulling into the parking lot and getting out of the car. There were people everywhere, though not as many as yesterday. News vans clogged the street in front of the station, and a line of people snaked from the front door and down the sidewalk. They weren't the kind of people who'd shown up before. No cops from other precincts, or private detectives, or reporters, or parents. This group looked like the Rocky Horror audience. She brushed past them, ignoring their clamoring voices, and went into the station. Cal was at his desk, looking dazed and confused. Earl sat at the other patrol desk. At Ellie's entrance, he smiled tiredly and said,
I just took a statement from a man who lives on the planet Rebar.
Ellie frowned. What?
That's who came looking for the girl. A man. No. An ambassador from Rebar. He had a tinfoil hat and black lips.
Ellie sat down at her desk with a sigh. Let him in, Earl, one at a time.
You're going to talk to them? Cal asked.
Just 'cause they're crazy doesn't mean they don't know something. Earl went to the door and opened it. The woman he let in wore a flowing purple dress, cowboy boots, and a blue suede headband. In her hands, she held a baseball-sized crystal ball. Another psychic. Ellie smiled and reached for her pen. For the next 2 hours, she and Earl and Peanut listened to one crackpot after another tell them who Alice really was. Her favorite answer? Anastasia Reborn. When the last man finally told his story and left, Ellie leaned back in her chair and sighed. Where did they all come from? Cal answered. Mort's picture. It makes the whole story seem unbelievable, especially since he used words like flying and wolf girl. His story hinted that she eats only live insects and does sign language with her feet. I heard CNN pulled out of town. This is so not good, Peanut said, reaching for her grapefruit juice. Cal jumped down from the desk. His tennis shoes hit with a little thump on the hardwood floor. Use her, he said quietly. It's our only choice. Ellie didn't have to ask who Cal meant. She'd had the same thought herself.
Julia?
Peanut said in a spiky voice.
But they'll only care about what happened in Silverwood.
They'll crucify her, Ellie said, looking up at Cal. Wolf girl works with disgraced doctor.
What choice do we have?
I don't know, Ellie said. Today, when she heard about Mort's photo, she looked as fragile as I've ever seen her.
She'll do it for Alice, Cal said.
Julia was still trying to formulate a dream catcher use plan when Ellie barged into the room. Her keys and handcuffs jangled with every step. Behind her, the dogs howled and scratched at the door, barking when she shut them out. Alice ran for the plants and hid there. Ellie clasped her keys and handcuffs, stilling them. I need to talk to you. Julia fought the urge to roll her eyes. The interruption had come at a particularly tender time. Fine. Ellie stood there a moment longer, then she said, I'll wait for you in the kitchen, and left the bedroom. Julia hid her pens and paper and notebooks. I'll be right back, Alice. Alice stayed hidden in her sanctuary, but when Julia reached for the knob, the child started to whimper. You're upset, Julia said softly. You're feeling afraid that I won't come back, but I will. There was nothing else she could say. She could only teach Alice about trust by returning. One of the fundamental truths of psychiatry was that sometimes you had to leave a patient who needed you. She slipped out of the room and shut the door behind her. Alice's low, pitiful howling could be heard through the door. The dogs were in the hallway, sitting up on their haunches, howling with Alice. She went downstairs and found Ellie out on the porch. It wasn't surprising, for as long as they'd been a family, important business and celebration had been taken care of outside. Rain or shine. Ellie was sitting in Dad's favorite chair. Of course, Ellie had always drawn strength from their father, just as Julia had gotten hope from her mother. The choice of Ellie's chair meant something big was on her mind. Julia sat in the rocker. A soft breeze kicked up in the yard, sent drying leaves cartwheeling across the grass. The gurgling song of the Fall River filled the air. She looked at her sister. I need to get back to her. What's up? Ellie looked pale, shaken even. It unnerved Julia to see her powerhouse of a sister look beaten. She leaned forward. What is it, Ellie?
The reporters are leaving town. They think the whole wild child thing is a hoax. By tomorrow, the Gazette and maybe the Olympian will be the only papers still writing about this story.
Julia knew suddenly what this was about, why Ellie looked nervous.
We need you to talk to the press, Ellie said softly, as if the tenor of her voice could remove the sting from the words.
Do you know what you're asking of me?
What choice do we have? If the story dies, we may never know who she is.
And you know what happens to abandoned kids? The state will warehouse her, ignore her.
I can get her to talk.
I know. But what if she doesn't know her name? We need her family to come forward.
Julia couldn't deny it. As painful as this decision was, the stakes were clear. It came down to her best interest versus Alice's.
I wanted to have something to tell them. A success that could be balanced against the failures. They won't...
What?
Believe in me, she thought. But said, nothing.
Julia looked away. The silvery river caught her gaze, reflecting like a strand of sunlight against the green lawn. In that instance of brightness, she recalled the flash of the camera lights and the barrage of ugly questions.
When the press went in for the kill, there was nothing that could protect you. The truth, least of all. She was damaged goods now. They wouldn't listen to her opinion on anything. But they'd put her on the front page.
I guess I can't be any more ruined, she said at last, shivering slightly. She hoped her sister didn't notice. But Ellie saw everything. She always had. Becoming a police officer had only heightened a natural skill for observation. I'll be there with you all the time, right beside you.
Thanks. Maybe it would make a difference, not being so damned alone when the cameras rolled. Schedule a press conference for tonight, say 7 o'clock.
What will you tell them?
I'll tell them what I can about Alice. I'll show them the pictures and reveal a few interesting behavioral observations and let them ask their questions.
I'm sorry, Ellie said.
Julia tried to smile.
I've lived through it before. I guess I can live through it again. For Alice.
Julia could hear the racket going on in the police station. Dozens of reporters and photographers and videographers were out there, setting up their equipment, running sound and picture checks. She and Ellie and Cal and Peanut were crammed into the employee lunchroom like hot dogs in a plastic pack.
You'll be fine,
Ellie said for at least the 10th time in the same number of minutes. As he had each time, Cal agreed.
I'm worried about Alice, Julia said. Myra is sitting just outside her door. She'll call if Alice makes a peep,
Ellie said.
You'll be fine.
Peanut said,
They'll call her a quack.
Ellie gasped,
Peanut?
Peanut grinned at Julia.
I use that technique on my kids, reverse psychology. Now, anything they say will sound good.
No wonder your kids keep piercing their body parts, Cal remarked. Peanut flipped him off.
At least I don't go to conventions in costume.
I haven't worn a costume in 20 years. Earl appeared at the door. Everything about him looked spit-shined, from his faded red comb-over to his lacquer-coated dress shoes. The creases in his uniform were laser-sharp.
They're ready for you, Julia.
He flushed, stammered.
I mean, Dr. Cates.
One by one, they peeled out of the lunchroom. The five of them collected again in the hallway.
I'll go first to introduce you, Ellie said.
Julia nodded.
For Alice, she thought.
Ellie walked down the hallway and turned the corner.
For Alice.
Then Earl was beside her, taking her arm. She followed him down the hall, around the corner, and into the flash of her old life. The crowd went wild, hurling questions like hand grenades.
Quiet! Ellie yelled, holding her hands out. Let Julia talk!
Gradually, the crowd stilled. Julia felt their eyes on her. Everyone in the room was judging her right now, finding her lacking in both judgment and skill. She drew in a sharp breath and caught it. Her gaze scanned the room, looking for a friendly face. In the back row, behind the reporters and photographers, were the locals. The Grimm sisters, and poor Fred in ash form. Barbara Kurek,
Lori Foreman and her bright-faced children, several of her high school teachers.
And Max.
He gave her a nod and a thumbs up. It was surprising, but that show of support helped calm her nerves. In Los Angeles, she'd always felt totally alone in facing the press.
As all of you know, I'm Dr. Julia Cates. I've been called to Rain Valley to treat a very special patient, whom we're calling Alice. I know that many of you will wish to focus on my past, but I beg you to see what matters. This child is nameless and alone in the world. We need your help in finding her family.
She held up a photograph.
This is the girl we're calling Alice. As you can see, she has dark hair and blue-green eyes.
Dr. Cates, what would you say to the parents of those children who died in Silverwood? Once she'd been interrupted, all hell broke loose. The questions came at her like shrapnel. How do you live with the guilt? Did you know Amber had purchased a gun? Have you listened to the death knell lyrics? Played the Doomsday Cavern video game? Did you test her for an allergy to Prozac? Julia kept talking until her voice gave out. By the time it was over and the reporters had all run off to meet their deadlines, she felt utterly spent. Alone at the podium, she watched the people leave. Finally, Ellie came up to her.
Jesus, Jules, that was bad, she said, looking almost as shaken as Julia felt. I'm sorry. I didn't know... You couldn't have. Can I do something to help?
Julia nodded.
Watch Alice for me, will you? I need to be alone for a while.
Ellie nodded. Julia tried not to make eye contact with Peanut or Cal. They stood near his desk holding hands. Both of them were pale. Peanut's bright pink cheeks were streaked with tears. Julia walked down the steps and into the cold lavender night. At the sidewalk, she turned left for no particular reason. Julia. She turned. He stood in the shadow of the street, almost lost in the shade from a giant evergreen.
I bought the motorcycle when I worked near Watts. Sometimes a man needs to clear his head. 75 miles an hour on a bike will do it.
She should walk away. Maybe even laugh. But she couldn't do it. In all of Rain Valley, he was probably the only person who really understood how she felt right now. How she knew that, she couldn't have said. It made no sense, but the notion stuck with her. I think 40 miles an hour would do it. I have a smaller head.
Smiling, he handed her a helmet. She put it on and climbed onto the bike behind him, circling him with her arms. They drove down the cool, gray streets of town, past the pod of news vans and the parking lot full of school buses. Wind beat at her sleeves and tugged at her hair when they turned onto the highway. They drove and drove, through the night, along the narrow, bumpy highway. She clung to him. When he turned off the highway and onto his gravel driveway, she didn't care. In the back of her mind, she'd known, when she climbed onto this man's motorcycle, where they would end up. Tomorrow, she would question her judgment, or lack thereof, but for now it felt good to have her arms around him. It felt good not to be alone. He parked the motorcycle in the garage. Wordlessly, they went into the house. She took a seat on the sofa while Max brought her a glass of white wine, then built a fire in the imposing River Rock fireplace and turned on the stereo. The first song that came on was something soft and jazzy.
You don't need to go to all this trouble, Max. For God's sake, don't start lighting the candles.
He sat down beside her.
And why is that?
I'm not going upstairs.
I don't remember asking you to.
She couldn't help smiling at that. Leaning back in the soft cushions, she looked at him over the rim of her wine glass. In the firelight, he looked breathtakingly handsome. A thought flitted through her mind, seduced her. Why not? She could follow him upstairs, climb into his big bed, and let him make love to her.
For a glorious while, she could forget. Women did that kind of thing all the time.
What are you thinking about?
She was sure he could read her mind. A man like him knew every nuance of desire on a woman's face. She felt her cheeks grow warm. I was thinking about kissing you, actually.
He leaned toward her. His breath smelled slightly of scotch.
And?
As my sister pointed out, I'm not your kind of woman.
He drew back. Believe me, Julia, your sister has no idea what kind of woman I want.
She heard the edge in his voice and saw something in his eyes that surprised her.
I've been wrong about you, she said, more to herself than to him.
You certainly jumped to a lot of conclusions.
She smiled at that.
Hazard of the trade. I tend to think I know people.
So you're an expert on relationships, huh?
She laughed ruefully. Hardly.
Let me guess. You're a one-man woman. A hearts and flowers romantic. Now who's jumping to conclusions? Am I wrong?
She shrugged.
I don't know how romantic I am, but I only know one way to love.
How's that?
All the way.
A frown creased his forehead.
That's dangerous.
Says the rock climber. When you climb, you risk your life. When I love, I risk my heart. All or nothing.
I'm sure it sounds stupid to you.
It doesn't sound stupid, he said in a voice so soft it sent shivers down her spine.
You have that same passion for your work, I can tell.
Yes, she said, surprised by the observation. That's why today was so hard.
For a long moment they stared at each other. Max seemed to be looking for something in her eyes, or seeing something he didn't understand. Finally he said,
When I worked in L.A., we used to get gang shootings almost every night. One bleeding, dying kid after another. The first few I stayed with long after my shift was over, and then talked to their brothers and sisters, trying to make them understand how their lives would unfold if they didn't change. By the end of the first year, I quit giving them the speech, and I quit standing by the bedsides all night. I couldn't save them all.
Their gazes locked. She felt as if she were falling into the endless sky of his eyes.
On good days, I know that. Today was not a good day. Or a good year, actually.
Tomorrow will be better.
He reached for her, pushed a thin strand of hair from her eyes. It would have taken nothing to kiss him then, just a slight movement toward him.
You're good at it,
she said shakily, drawing back.
What?
Seducing women.
I'm not seducing you.
But you are, she thought.
She put down her wine glass and stood. She needed some distance between them.
Thanks for all of this, Max. You really saved me tonight. I need to get back to Alice, though. I can't be gone long.
Slowly he got to his feet and walked her to the door. Without saying a word, he led her to the garage. They got onto the motorcycle and drove home. 14. The motorcycle's engine roared through the quiet night, loud enough to rattle the nearby trees. In Los Angeles, the noise would have set off a dozen car alarms. Here, it fought with the endless quiet of the dark road. Max came to the end of the driveway and slowed down, then stopped and glanced back. Deep in the trees, the small house was made smaller by the night. All that darkness reduced it to a few lit windows.
I only know one way to love. All or nothing.
How was it that a few quietly spoken words could hit him so hard? He took off his helmet and jammed it onto the sissy bar behind him.
Air, freedom, that was what he needed now. Something to clear his head and erase that moment.
He hit the gas.
went faster and faster until he was rocketing down the road. Everything was a blur of shadows. He knew he was going too fast. There were deer and elk out here that could kill him in the blink of an eye, and potholes that would bite his tire and send him flying through the air. But he didn't care. As long as he was moving at this speed, he couldn't think about her. The minute he turned onto his road and slowed down, though, it all came back. He parked the bike in the garage and went into his dark, quiet house, immediately turning on every light and the stereo.
Noise and light aren't life, Max.
It was Susie's voice. Though she wasn't here, had never been here, sometimes he saw his life through her eyes. Old habits were hard to break.
No dining room chairs, Max. No pictures on the wall. You can't call this a home.
He'd kept it bare on purpose. Furniture didn't matter to him. Neither did decorations or comfort. He wanted a place where he could forget about all the things that made a house a home. Here he could drink his drinks, watch sports on the big screen, and work in his woodshop.
All or nothing.
He should never have gone to her tonight, and he'd known it. After the press conference, he'd left the station as quickly as he could, intending to get on his bike and go home. Yet he'd waited outside, milled around in the darkness, like a love-struck kid. The trouble was, he knew how hot the glare of that spotlight could be. When he'd looked at her there, behind all those microphones, trying so hard to be strong, he'd made a dangerous turn. He'd noticed her trembling lower lip and pale, pale face, her teary eyes, and his first thought had been that he wanted to kiss those tears away. For the first time in 7 years, he'd been truly afraid, and not from misplacing his foot on a rock ledge or free-falling too far before pulling the ripcord. All those moments of feeling he'd accumulated in the past years were facsimiles of an emotion. He'd thought, honestly believed, that he couldn't feel anymore unless his life was at risk. That was what had driven him to climb rock faces and jagged mountains, the need to feel again, even if it lasted only a moment. Now, he'd felt something again. All he'd had to do was look in Julia's sad eyes. Julia went into the house. Ellie was in the living room, sitting on the sofa with the dogs spread across her lap. "It's about time," she said in a voice that held some irritation. "I wasn't gone that long. I was worried about you. The press conference was brutal." Julia sat on the overstuffed cushion and put her feet on the coffee table. She felt Ellie's gaze on her face, but she didn't turn to meet it. "Yeah." There was a long pause. Julia knew that her sister was trying to figure out what to say next. "Don't bother," Julia said. "I just have to get through it. Again. At least this time I have Alice."
"And me?"
Julia heard a shadow of hurt in her sister's voice.
"And you."
At that, Julia felt something in her chest relax.
"So, where did you go tonight?"
Julia felt heat flare in her face. She glanced down at the dogs. "Max's house." Ellie straightened.
"Really? Max never takes women to his house."
"I think he felt sorry for me." Ellie was staring at her now and frowning.
"Did you?"
"No," Julia said quickly. She didn't even want to hear the words out loud.
"Of course not." "You watch out for him," Ellie said at last. "I'm not kidding, Jules. And I'm not jealous. Just be careful."
Julia was touched by the concern.
"I will be."
She stood up.
"I'm beat. I'm going to crash. Thanks for waiting up for me. Thanks for throwing yourself on the fire for us."
Julia headed for the stairs. She was just reaching for the banister when Ellie called out her name. Julia paused and turned around. "Yeah?" everything will be okay, you know? Sooner or later it'll die down and they'll remember how good you are at what you do.
Julia released her breath. That's what Mom would have said to me.
Ellie smiled. Julia tried to hang on to those words, to let them be her armor.
It was what she'd done as a child, whenever she'd been wounded by some slight at school, or by her father's inattention. She'd gone to her mother in tears.
Everything will be okay, her mom would say, wiping the moisture from her cheeks and enfolding her in a hug that smelled of suave shampoo and cigarettes.
She climbed the stairs to her room and went directly to the twin bed by the window. Julia pulled the blankets up and covered the child, then bent down slowly and kissed her sweet, soft cheek. She meant to rise, but knelt by the bed instead. Without realizing what she was going to do, she bowed her head and closed her eyes.
Give me strength.
She kissed Alice's cheek again, then climbed into her own narrow, lonely bed and fell asleep.
Something is wrong. Girl senses it the second she opens her eyes. She stands still, sniffing the air. Many things, she has learned, can be sensed if one is quiet. The coming of snow smells like apples and makes her littlest fingers swell up. A hunting bear makes a sound like snoring. Danger can be heard in plenty of time if one is still and quiet. This was a lesson her could never learn. In the lazy other days that she sometimes visits in her sleep, she remembers how her used to try talking to girl. Always the noise and the trouble that came afterward. Now, in her safe place, hidden by the small trees, she stares through the leaves at the sun-haired her who is so silent. Has girl done something wrong? Across the room, sun-hair looks up. She looks sad, like maybe her eyes are going to start leaking again. And tired. That was how her looked before she got dead.
Come here, Alice. Sunhair pats the bed. Girl knows that movement, the touching of the bed. It means that Sunhair will open the magic pictures and talk and talk. Girl loves that. The sound of her voice, the way she lets girl be so close, the safety of curling up beside her. Come here, Alice.
Girl eases around the plants and shuffles forward, trying to be as small and still as possible, just in case she has done something bad. She wishes Sunhair would have on the happy face again. That makes girl feel light. She keeps her head down, careful not to make eye contact. At Sunhair's feet, she drops to her knees. The touch on her forehead is soft and gentle. Girl looks up.
This is going to be difficult, Alice. She sighs. Trust me, okay?
Girl doesn't know what to do, how to show her obedience. Another little sound escapes her.
I'm sorry.
Sunhair reaches into a box on the floor and pulls out it. For a split second, girl freezes, too frightened to move. She glances around the room, expecting him to break into this too light place. She scrambles backward. Finally, she screams. Once she starts, she can't stop. She knows it is wrong, bad, stupid to make so much noise, and that the strangers will come and hurt her now, but she is past the rules, past thinking. She hits one of the baby trees, and it falls sideways, hitting the ground with a loud noise. She screams more, gulping down air, trying to get away from it, but the white cave wall stops her. She hits it hard, feels pain thump her in the back of her head. Sunhair is talking to her, stringing sounds together that are as pretty as shells, but she can't hear it. Her heart is beating so fast, and it is still there, in Sunhair's hand. As it gets closer, girl starts to scratch herself, drawing blood. Sunhair is with her now, holding her so tightly that girl can't claw herself.
Okay, 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 okay. No hurt. I know you're scared. It's okay, okay, okay.
Sunhair's voice finally comes through. Girl's screaming fades. She breathes hard and fast, trying to be strong, but she is so scared. Sunhair lets go of her. Slowly, as if she is the one afraid, the pretty woman lifts it up. Girl's eyes widen. She feels sick inside, desperate. The air in the room darkens. Everything smells like smoke and blood. It catches the light. She closes her eyes, remembering his dark, hairy fingers twisting the strings, bending the twigs, threading the beads. She whimpers, "Alice, Alice." The touch on her cheek is so gentle that at first she thinks she's imagined it, that her has come back. "Alice, open your eyes." The touch feels so good. She can breathe again. Inside her chest, her heart begins to slow down. "It's okay, Alice. Open your eyes." Girl is beginning to hear something familiar in the garble of sounds. It pokes at her memory, makes her think of a time so long ago it turns to mist when she reaches for it. Slowly, she opens her eyes. Sunhair backs up a little. "This is a dream catcher," she says, unsmiling now. "You know this." "Dream catcher." She feels her tummy start to shake. In a single motion, Sunhair breaks the dream catcher in half. Then she rips the strings apart. The beads go flying, skitter across the floor. Girl gasps. "Oh, no, no, no! This is bad. He will come now. He will hurt them." Sunhair reaches into the box and pulls out another one. She rips it into pieces and throws it away. Girl watches in awe. Sunhair ruins another and another. She takes something from the table and smashes it down on the pieces in front of her. Finally, smiling again, she holds a dream catcher toward Girl. "Break it. No hurt. No hurt." Girl understands. Sunhair wants her to break his toy. But he will hurt her. "He's not here. He's gone. Is that what Sunhair is trying to show her?" "Come on, Alice. No hurt." She looks at Sunhair. The woman's watery green eyes make her feel all shaky inside. Slowly, her hand trembling, she reaches out to touch it. "It will burn you."
But it doesn't. It feels like nothing in her hand, just bits of string and twig. There is no blood on it, no trace of his big, angry hands. She rips it in half, and at the motion, she feels something new grow inside her, a kind of rumble that starts deep in her belly and catches in her throat. It feels so good to break his toy, to ruin it, to reach into the box and grab another one. She rips them all, then destroys the box. As she breaks and snaps, she thinks of him, of all the ways he hurt her, and all the times she wanted to scream. When the box is empty, she looks up, gulping air as if she doesn't know how to breathe. Sunhair takes Girl in her arms and holds her tightly. Girl doesn't know what is happening. Her body is shaking.
"It's okay, okay, okay. No hurt, no hurt."
Girl feels herself relaxing. A warm feeling blossoms in her chest and spreads out down her arms and into her fingers.
"You're safe now."
She hears that, feels it, safe.
Julia paused in her note-taking to read what she had written. She stands behind the plants for much of the day, staring alternately at me or out the window. Sunshine particularly engages her attention, as do bright plastic objects and dishes. Many things seem to frighten her. Loud noises, thunder, the color gray, bright and shiny metal objects, dream catchers, and knives. The dog's barking always sends her running to the door. It is the only time she even approaches that side of the room. Often, she howls in response. Right now, she is sitting at my feet, looking up at me. This is her new favorite spot. Since ruining the dream catchers, she has broken through the solitary border of the previous days. She is never more than a few inches away from me. Often, she paws at my feet and legs. When tired, she curls up on the floor beside me, resting her cheek on my foot. Julia looked down at the girl. "What are you thinking, Alice?" As always, there was no response. Alice stared up at her intently. It was as if she were trying to understand. So intent was she that it took her a moment to realize that someone was knocking on the door. "Come in," she said distractedly. The door opened just a crack, and Ellie slipped into the room. Behind her, the golden retrievers were going crazy, barking, scratching, whining. She shut the door firmly. At Ellie's entrance, Alice ran to her hiding place. "You've got to teach those dogs some manners," Julia said without looking up. She made a notation on Alice's chart. Responds to dogs by howling quietly. Today, she moved toward the door.
"Jules?"
She heard something in her sister's voice and looked up.
"What?" "Some people are here to see you. Doctors from the state care facility, a researcher from the UW, and a woman from DSHS.
She should have expected it. The media had hinted that Alice was wild. Just the suggestion of it would tempt other doctors, researchers. In the old days, no one would have dared to encroach on her patient. These were not those days. Now she would look weak. Predators would begin to circle her. She got slowly to her feet and methodically put her notes and charts and pens away. All the while, Alice watched her, looking worried.
"I'll be right back, Alice," she said to the girl hidden in the foliage,
then followed her sister downstairs. The living room seemed full of people at first glance. On closer examination, Julia saw that there were only 3 men and 1 woman. They simply appeared to take up a lot of space.
"Dr. Cates," said the man closest to her, moving forward. He was tall and scarecrow thin, with a nose big enough to hang an umbrella on. "I'm Simon Kletch from the state's Therapeutic Residential Care Facility, and these are my colleagues, Byron Barrett and Stanley Goldberg from the Behavioral Sciences Lab at the UW. You know Ms. Wharton from DSHS.
Julia said evenly, "Hello." Ellie went to the kitchen and stood by the counter. A silence fell. They all stared at one another until Ellie asked them to sit. And still it was too quiet. Finally, Simon cleared his throat.
"Rumors are that this girl in your care is a wild child, or something close to that. We'd like to see her."
He glanced up the stairs. His eyes glinted with excitement. "No." He seemed surprised by that.
"You know why we are here."
Julia could hear his eagerness.
"Why don't you tell me?"
"You're making no progress with her."
"That's hardly true. In fact, we've made huge strides. She can eat and dress herself and use the toilet. She's beginning to communicate in her way. I believe
you're civilizing her,"
the behavioral scientist said sharply, peering at her through small oval glasses. A sheen of sweat sparkled on his upper lip. "We need to study her, Dr. Cates, as she is. We men of science have sought a child like this for decades.
If taught to talk, she can be a goldmine of information. Think of it. Who are we in the absence of one another? What is true human nature? Is language instinctive? And what is the link between language and humanity? Do words allow us to dream, to think, or vice versa? She can answer all these questions. Even you must see that.
Even I? What does that mean? She asked, although she knew.
Silverwood, Dr. Kletch said.
You never lost a patient? She said sharply to him.
Of course I have. We all have. But your failure was public. I'm getting a lot of pressure to take over this girl's case.
I'm her foster parent as well as her therapist, Julia said.
She didn't call Dr. Kletch a bottom feeder by sheer force of will. Of course, he wanted to help Alice. She could advance his career.
Dr. Kletch believes that the minor child belongs in a therapeutic care facility, said the woman from DSHS. If you can't assure us that you'll get her talking and find out her name, then
I will get her talking, Julia said. We need to study her. This from the behavioral scientist. And learn from her, added Dr. Kletch. Julia stood.
You are like all the doctors who have been associated with children like this in the past. You want to use her? Treat her like a lab rat, so that you can write your papers and find fame. When you've sucked her dry, you'll move on and forget her. She'll grow up warehoused and behind bars and medicated beyond recognition. I won't let you do it. She's my foster child and my patient. The state has authorized me to care for her, and that's what I intend to do. She forced a thin smile. But thank you for your concern.
No one spoke for a moment. Julia turned to the social worker.
Don't be fooled by them, Miss Wharton. I'm the one who cares about this child.
Miss Wharton bit her lip nervously and looked at the doctors, then at Julia.
Get the child talking, Dr. Cates. There's a lot of interest in this case. A lot of pressure being put on our office to move her into therapeutic residential care. Your history and the media frenzy doesn't sit well with my boss. No one wants another incident.
Ellie stepped forward.
And that's the end of the meeting. Thank you all for coming.
She walked through the room, herded the crowd toward the door. The doctors were arguing, sputtering, gesturing with their hands.